A couch potato warning is in effect as DirecTV transforms Thanksgiving into Streamsgiving. DirecTV's got free TV nationwide. With a heavy front of 60-plus live channels and a steady stream of streaming apps, conditions are perfect for nonstop entertainment. So hunker down on the couch and sign up for your free trial of My Entertainment from DirecTV. I'm going to watch some free TV.
Start streaming My Entertainment from DirecTV now at streamsgiving.com. My free is free. Paid services. 5-day free trial, then auto renews monthly. Cancel anytime. Temporary credit hold may apply. Restrictions apply. See streamsgiving.com for details. AI produced.
CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor with Evan Thomas. His new book is Road to Surrender, Three Men and the Countdown to the End of World War II. The U.S. Army Air Force, it wasn't a separate service yet. Bob Lovett, who is the Deputy Assistant Secretary of War working for Mr. Simpson, imagines a future in which the Air Force will be its own service. But right now, it is subordinate to George Marshall, the commander of the U.S. Army. But we need to meet several personalities because they're going to get involved in this question of the atomic bomb and mass murder and ending the war and precision bombing, all these euphemisms that are important to understand. Evan, first we'll meet the man, Tui Spots, who is deputy to Hap Arnold, the commander of the U.S. Army Air Force. Initially, Spots is given the job of bombing Germany. And then he's given the job of bombing Japan. Let's start with Germany, because Spots is troubled by bombing civilians. The British called it dehousing. And yet the war in Germany, as I understand it, was all about bombing the cities and then using the euphemism of precision bombing. What was Spots' opinion right before Dresden? Did he have one?
Spots was a member of the so-called bomber mafia that believed that bombing could actually spare the world from intense trench warfare. A few bombs here, strategically placed, could end the war quickly. That didn't work. Although we had a Norden bomb site, you know, we had American technology, we had a B-17, good plane. In the skies over Germany, it's cloudy. The Luftwaffe is shooting at you. There's flak. We dropped our bombs in the wrong place, most of them missed, and we ended up bombing cities, bombing civilians. And Spots adhered to this ideology of precision bombing and called it precision bombing, but he knew that it wasn't, that it missed, and that we ended up killing civilians. The British were doing this openly. The British were doing area bombing. They made no bones about it. The Germans had bombed their cities. The British were going to bomb German cities. You know, they were open about it. Bomber Harris was pretty crude almost in his bloody mindedness. But Spots agonized over this. And when American and British bombers bombed Dresden in February of 1945 and firebombed them and burned this beautiful ancient medieval city to the ground, Spots was very troubled by it. And his way of dealing with it was to gamble. He was a poker player. He blew $1,700, 2 months' pay in one night, just because he was so upset about what they were doing, what he felt they had to do to win the war. Then Spots has made, you know, he wants to go home, see his wife. He hasn't seen her barely for 3 years. And he's told by General Marshall, no, you're going to the Pacific to lead Operation Downfall, the final battle against Japan. And what that means is dropping the atom bomb. And Spots says, look, if I'm going to kill 100,000 people, I want to see it in writing. And he demands an order. So he is given a written order to drop the atom bomb.
Spots arrives in Guam. The man who's important at the time is Curtis LeMay, who's leading the firebombing, the burning of the Japanese cities. LeMay is often castigated as cruel. LeMay was being effective. That's what the Army wanted him to do, and he was working for Hap Arnold. All of them, did they have these mixed opinions, as Spots did, of precision bombing, of bombing cities? Did they each come to it differently, or was Spots by himself?
Slightly differently. It depended. LeMay. LeMay, as you said, you know, he's been portrayed as a monster. I think that's unfair. He was one to be effective, and he tried precision bombing. It didn't work. And so he said, okay, if that's not going to work, we're going to try to come in low at night, use incendiaries. That did work. So he was doing what worked. of course, it was killing a lot of people. LeMay tried to be a tough guy about this. How much of that was an act, I don't really know, but he put on an act. Others did have concerns about killing civilians. The famous General Doolittle, who led the U.S. raid on Tokyo in April 1942, a very brave raid, he shared Spatz's concern about killing civilians. But they were in an impossible position. You know, you got to win the war. And to do that, you have to kill civilians. It's why you don't want to start wars, is because they lead you into these dark corners. And they knew it. Spatz wrote in his diary, "I was against the atom bomb, but because I've always been against killing civilians in cities. But I was persuaded that it would ultimately save lives. And I think actually it did. It actually saved a lot of Japanese lives who would have otherwise starved to death."
The men who are designated to drop the bombs. The first is Tibbets. This is the Hiroshima bomb. Did Spatz have a relationship with Tibbets, or was he chosen somewhere at the end of the command?
They had a relationship because in the small world department, Spatz had sent Tibbet out on the very first bombing raid of France back in 1942. So they knew each other. But Tibbets is actually chosen by, I guess it was General Marshall, to run what they call a 509th Composite Group, which is the little secret air arm, air unit that's going to drop the atom bomb. So Tibbets goes back to the United States and trains this group in the dropping of the atom bomb. They're not reporting to Spatz at this point. At the end of the war, they are. At the very end of the war, when Spatz comes to the Pacific, Tibbets is reunited with Spatz. And when Tibbets arrives from having successfully wiped out Hiroshima, he gets out of the plane in his dirty overalls, and Spatz walks up and pins a Distinguished Service Medal on him.
Yes, the detail I liked from your reporting, Evan, was the crew of Enola Gay and the Observer planes were then taken for a two-hour briefing, and by the time they were free to celebrate, all the hot dogs were gone and all the beer was gone.
The ironies of war, cruelties of war.
And a detail about Charles Sweeney, who commanded Boxcar, the Nagasaki bomb. Did Spatz know him personally?
I don't think so. I don't. I mean, I think they met, but there was no relationship there. Sweeney was unfortunate because everything went perfectly on the Hiroshima raid.
Right.
Sweeney's raid of Nagasaki was snake bit. The rendezvous plane showed up in the wrong place.
We have 30 seconds, Evan. Go ahead.
First target was Kokura was clouded over. After they dropped the bomb, almost having a ditch, they had, I think, 30 gallons of gas out of 7,000 gallons. It was almost a disaster. And they were lucky that the bomb was a mile off target. It killed fewer people. General Spatz was glad that the bomb was off target because that meant it killed only 35,000 people instead of 70,000. These are the moral equations of war.
The book is The Road to Surrender, Three Men and the Countdown to the End of the World War of World War II. Evan Thomas is the author. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.